Hello, my name is Malcolm Scott, and I just got free. I just got free after almost 2 years. I've been out, and I spent almost 22 years incarcerated for a crime that I did not commit.
Hi, this is DeMarco, and you're listening to Actual Innocence, a podcast bringing awareness to wrongful convictions and problems with the justice system. How are you doing this week, Brooke?
I am doing amazing. How was your week?
My week was, what is the word I'm looking for? I'm moving. I'm looking for boxes and trying to get stuff in boxes and, you know, but other than that, I'm excited about moving.
So before we move on to trivia, I wanted to thank today's sponsors for supporting our show and thank the listeners for supporting the sponsors.
Today's sponsors are ZipRecruiter and BarkBox.
We're going to take a minute to talk about ZipRecruiter. Are you in need of great talent for your business, but you're short on time? Well, you don't have to get lost in a huge stack of resumes to find your perfect hire. You just need the right tools. Smarter tools. With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with just one click. So you can rest easy knowing your job is being seen by the right candidates. Then, ZipRecruiter puts its smart matching technology to work, actively notifying qualified candidates about your job within minutes of posting, so you receive the best possible matches. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other hiring sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on the right candidates finding you. It finds them. No wonder 80% of the employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. And the easy-to-use ZipRecruiter dashboard lets you manage your hiring process from start to finish, all in one place. ZipRecruiter. The smartest way to hire. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by growing businesses of all sizes and industries to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/actual. That's ZipRecruiter.com/actual. One more time, to try for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/actual. So today we're interviewing a man by the name of Malcolm Scott. I have some trivia questions about his case. Are you ready?
Yes.
So can you guess what was the charge that was filed against Malcolm?
Yes, I think I can.
Can you tell us why you might know this case so well?
Yes, it is. Malcolm is my co-defendant, and we were both 17 years old when we were sentenced to a life sentence plus 170 years in. We end up serving 22 years for this crime we didn't commit.
So I'm getting ready to play Malcolm's interview. What do you think the people should know before I hit play?
Malcolm is a funny guy. Very funny, but at the same time, he's smart. He's a good speaker. You know, I actually believe that he's a better speaker than me. You know, he's very educated. The words he uses, he's very... The passion is passion. Just listen to the passion in his voice.
Oh man, my life growing up in Tulsa was pretty cool. It was awesome. I was always into sports a lot. You know, that ran in my family. My brothers played, you know, so definitely I followed in behind them, and I played a lot of sports as well. You know, that was really a big thing for us growing up. I got 12 brothers and sisters, so growing up here in Tulsa was crowded. It was crowded in our home, you know, so that was another thing. It was never a dull moment.
Were you 1 or 12?
I'm number 4.
4?
Yeah, I'm fourth from the top. So we got along like cats and dogs, you know, like brothers and sisters do.
My brother and I would argue, but nobody else could be mean to my brother, just me.
Exactly, that's the way it was. So... if you got into it with us, it was not a smart thing to do. It definitely was never a good thing to do because you might have like 4 or 5 other people right on you, breathing down your throat if you got into it with any one of my siblings. So,
did any of your older siblings pick on you, or did you pick on any of your younger siblings?
I used to, you know, put them in the fryer and spin them around, but that was just for fun.
Are you serious?
You really did that, man.
Hey, it was fun. They could spin around in a circle. They felt like they was in a little toy or something. It was all good. Yeah, it was like a carnival ride, because, our family was so huge. Even with a washer and dryer at our house, that was not fast enough. So we went to a public laundry so she could put all the clothes in there. You know what I mean? There was so many of us. So while we were there, to have fun, I would just put them in the washer and spin them around.
I knew that you was getting at that.
And not the washer, but the dryer. The dryer. The big ones. The really big ones. The big industrial ones.
So... My co-host, a man by the name of DeMarco Carpenter.
Okay. I know that guy.
Yeah, really? I was going to ask that because he's also from Tulsa, Oklahoma. So I was wondering if you guys had ever met.
Yeah. I think I know that dude.
How did we meet?
A few years ago. We met on, what street was that we sat on? Woodrow. Yeah, I think we met on Woodrow, you know me? Through Big Burner. Ain't that how I met you through Big Burner?
Yeah. I met Malcolm through his relative, Marlon, a local rapper.
So, do you remember the first time you met? This is not like a love story or anything, but, do you remember the first time that you guys... I'm going to put some love music in the background here.
I remember the indoor fun fair. But I also...
Oh, yeah.
When we went and hung out at...
Oh, that was an episode right there, man.
You got to wait for the book to come out to read, to hear about that.
Yeah. So we stayed ever for the book. Yeah. But we stayed in the same neighborhood. That's really where we basically met. Like, my cousin, Marlon, he stayed, on Woodrow. And my aunt stayed on Woodrow, my grandmother, which was where I was staying. With my grandmother at the time, and I think DeMarco stayed over on Woodrow, off of Woodrow as well. So, we just kind of just got to know each other through the neighborhood. Burton introduced us, which is Marlon, my cousin. And so we kind of just, got cool from there, hanging out and stuff. And like you said, we went to a football game is where we really kind of, got a little closer, really kind of got understanding each other and from that situation right there. So, but since then, man, we just been really good friends.
Were you playing?
No. We were just there watching.
Because I was just editing another interview that Mr. Carpenter was talking about how he was a pretty, pretty good basketball player. So I was wondering, if you and him played basketball, who would win?
You would probably beat me in basketball.
Yeah, Malcolm's sport is football. Malcolm, tell us a little bit about you and sports and your upbringing.
Oh yeah,
your childhood.
I'm always big on sports. I played football. I ran track, and I wrestled. Yeah, I was always really into contact sports. I'm real big on contact sports. So when I was growing up, that was really what I was into. I mean, I like basketball. I just wasn't very good at it. I wasn't tall enough really like that for basketball.
September of 1994. Your life changed pretty big then. How old were you that year?
Well, I was 17 years old in 1994.
And what were you doing with your life? Were you in high school?
Actually, yeah, that's right, DeMarco. Well, we both trying to get in, Project 12 or something like that?
Alternative school.
Alternative school, yeah. Yeah, I think we was trying to get enrolled in.
I was going there.
Alternative school. Yeah, I was trying to get enrolled in alternative school in 1994. I was originally going to Rogers.
Can you tell us about the crime that you were accused of in September of that year?
That they changed your life.
Oh yeah, I mean they charged us with murder. We was charged with first degree murder. Two counts for shooting with intent to kill, and a fourth count for use of a vehicle to facilitate discharge of a firearm.
Do you know anything about the actual crime?
Oh yeah, we didn't heard it a million times. I mean, I know it backwards and forwards now. You know, after spending so many years, you know, going over it and going over it and going over it, you know, still trying to figure out how I got caught up in the situation, how I was going to find a way out of the situation. Just going through that over the years, of course, yeah, I know the case backwards and forward. I probably didn't.
Are you okay with telling the people listening in case they haven't heard DeMarco's episode yet?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't have any problem with talking about the situation. I mean, I want people to know about it. I want people to hear about how these type of mistakes can happen in life. You know, I mean, I was, like I said, I was 17 years old when the police came and arrested me. I didn't have a clue of what they were even talking about. So, you know, they came and arrested me and they went to questioning me about, you know, this situation and, you know, telling me like, we know you had something to do with it. And, you know, all these things telling me we got somebody that says you had something to do with it. And it was just really, really crazy. I mean, like I said, I was 17 at the time. So I was really kind of, you know, scared, not really knowing what was going on. They're asking me about a murder. You know, I mean, I'm like, that's a serious crime. That's really, really serious. I don't think it gets any more serious than murder. So, of course, I was just really, you know, kind of scared and just not and bewildered and not knowing what was going to happen next, you know. And so
what were you actually doing during the time of the crime?
We had a good alibi, actually. You know, I mean, we had several people that were testifying in our behalf. They just ignored everything that everybody was saying. I mean, for some reason, I guess they decided that, well, since they're family, they're all going to lie for you.
Were you and DeMarco together when the police came?
When they came and arrested me?
Mm-hmm.
No, I wasn't with DeMarco when they arrested me. With it. No, I was at my uncle's house sitting over there on the porch when they pulled up, and my uncle and my grandmother at my grandmother's house, and they came and pulled up and arrested me and told me they was taking me down for questioning.
Who got arrested first?
I got arrested first. Yeah, they arrested me on September 11th, the day after the crime, or day, yeah, about a day after the crime.
They arrested me 2 days after the crime. And we were together the earlier in the day, the night the crime happened, we were together that early in the day.
So the crime was, I'm sorry, refresh my memory, was it a drive-by or it was a shooting from a car? Is that right?
Yes, correct. Yeah, it was a shooting from a car. Yeah, it was a drive-by, like you said.
And so you're 17 years old and they arrest you from your uncle's house. And so they take you to the police station?
Yeah, they took me down to the police station for questioning.
Did they ask you? I mean, you were 17. Did they ask if you wanted a parent or an attorney?
I think they asked me, you know, but they made it like it wasn't that serious. Like, we're just questioning you right now. We're not really, you know, arresting you yet. They tried to make it seem like it's not that serious. We're just asking you a few questions and you'll go home. You know what I mean? So you really don't need a attorney here or anything like that, you know? But at the same time, you're asking me serious questions. So, you know, but when I couldn't give them what they wanted, you know, when I couldn't just make up a lie for them or give them, you know, just accept responsibility for something I didn't have nothing to do with, they got upset with me, you know, put the handcuffs on me and told me, you know, you're going to jail and, you know, you better tell us, you know, what we want to know. And I'm like, man, I can't tell you what you want to know because I don't know what happened. I had absolutely nothing to do with it. You know, so I guess at that point they were just like, well, we don't want to talk to you no more. You're getting arrested. You're getting charged with murder and we're taking you to jail. And, you know, so I guess I don't know if they were trying to get me to sweat it out and see if I would go ahead and tell them something or not. But I'm like, well, shoot, that's what y'all going to have to do is take me on to jail because I don't know what's going on. I don't even know who these people are you're talking about that got shot. You know, so.
They came after you because a witness?
Yeah, apparently somebody told them. Apparently one of the witnesses, and he admitted that he told them that he didn't actually see me do it. he just seen a car, then he said it looked like mine. What do you think? I'm the one that did it.
So a witness who thought you might have done it?
Yeah. But yeah, what's crazy is that the car that he was describing, I never even had a car like that. You know, and then on top of that, it's like, how do you arrest somebody for somebody saying, I didn't see the guy. I just seen a car that looked like the one he had. So we think it was him. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, at what point do you decide to charge somebody with murder for that type of, you know, witness testimony? And then, you know, when it was time for court, his whole statement changed. And he decided, oh, well, yeah, I seen him do it this time. But then, you know what I'm saying? And later on, he admits, I lied when it was time for court because they were trying to charge me with some stuff, too. So I just told them what they wanted me to tell them. You know, I said what they wanted me to say.
To lessen his own sentence, or?
Yeah, yeah. Basically, I mean, to get off of the case that he was on because he had some charges for some crimes himself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these guys, they didn't go pick no, you know, square school kids, you know what I mean, to get up here and testify. These weren't like these were dudes that were on crimes themselves. When they brought these guys in here to testify on us, they were in county jail suits because they were locked up in the county for crimes their own selves. So it's like, yeah.
Can I ask you guys something? Because I just want to prove a point. Were you guys part of a gang or hanging out with a gang?
No, we weren't in a gang. You know, I think what it is, like back then, anybody that they thought maybe affiliated or, you know, saying if they see you in groups or whatever, they automatically put you in, you know, they had such a big fear of gangs that it was like they were just trying to get everybody off the streets that they could finally think might have something to do with these guys. Yeah, I know gang members. When you're growing up in, you know what I'm saying, where I grew up at, it's gangs everywhere. But I have friends of mine that, you know what I mean, they went on and joined gangs later on in life and stuff like that. Yeah. So I know plenty of gang members. I know them. But that doesn't make me one of them. And that doesn't make me a murderer because you know some gang members. You know what I mean?
Well, and that doesn't make them murderers. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's the point I was going to make.
Yeah, it don't even make them. Yeah, it don't even make them murderers, you know?
Just because someone might be affiliated with a gang, that doesn't make them a bad person, and that doesn't mean that they committed a crime. So that's the point I was going to get at. Even if you were, that wouldn't have made you guilty of this, and it would have been totally irrelevant. And I think they were trying to imply that at your trial, and that's not okay to try and assassinate someone's character like that.
Yeah, it didn't kind of get brought up. It was the main thing that they used to convict us.
Yeah.
Seriously. Like, the DA went completely around the crime itself and just concentrated on gangs. He just did everything he could to scare. Yeah, he wanted to make sure he scared the jury completely out of their wits to where they're like, whether he did it or not, they're hardcore gang members. They probably killed other people. We got to lock them up.
They overlooked a lot of facts, too.
It was like you just ignored the facts. I mean, because think about it, Brooke. You pick up this guy. Pick up a guy. He's wounded from just getting shot from the same group of guys that you're saying got this drive-by done on him. He admits that, you know, he just got shot by these same group of guys. You pick him up. He has the murder weapon in his possession. He has the car that the witnesses described that did the drive-by. You look in his glove box. There's a box of bullet shells that are the same bullets that shot the victims. And yet, at all this evidence, you say, oh, he's not the one that did it. He let these other two guys.
You're talking about the actual killer?
Yeah, I'm talking about the actual killer, Michael Wilson. The guy that actually got caught.
They picked him up that same night?
Yeah, they caught him with all this. They caught him with the gun in his possession at his house, in his bedroom. You see what I'm saying? Like, the police followed him into his house and got the gun off of his person.
Literally.
You understand what I'm saying? Literally. They literally got the gun from him. But I don't know how you can completely ignore that strong of a evidence and say this guy had nothing to do with it. He gave this, he gave all this stuff to two other guys. They went and did the crime and brought everything back to him. At no point did, I mean, does it even sound fathomable to believe something like that? I mean, that's just preposterous. You know what I'm saying? Like, how a jury can just accept that and just go with that is still beyond me. You know, it's like...
Were you tried together?
Yeah, we were tried together.
What was your defense like? Did your defense bring up any of the stuff that you just said? Because that would be, if I were a juror, that would be enough to make me have reasonable doubt.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. But I mean, I don't know. But I guess he got so overwhelmed with the gang talk. You know what I mean? It was like they completely veered away from the case and made it all about gangs. They just ignored the crime itself and said, as long as we can prove that these dudes are hardcore gang members, then we can get them. We can convict them. And that's what they set out to do. And that's what they did. That was what it was all about. Scare the jury into believing that these are hardcore killers. They're gang members. They do this kind of stuff. We know this don't make sense. We know this case don't make sense. We know we completely got a whole different person for it. But we're going to get that out. We can't get that guy, but we can get them.
And not only were we not hardcore gang members, there was not even any evidence to support their claim.
Yeah, no. Yeah, no evidence. All the evidence is pointing to somebody else. That's why I was saying, like, this guy who, when they first arrested us, said that he seen a car. He didn't see me, but he seen a car that looked like my car. He described this car that this guy had in his parking lot. And that's not even my car.
How long was the trial?
What was it, 3 days, bro? About 3 days, if I'm not mistaken. 2 or 3 days. They did it pretty fast. You know, they didn't take no time to convict him. They probably already had it set what they were going to do. You know, I mean, and they let him out, the guy that they caught with all the evidence, they let him off with a 5-year probation. And while he's out, he hasn't even went to court yet on that charge. He was still out on bond and committed another murder.
Capital murder.
Yeah, committed a capital murder.
A murder that could have been prevented if they would have just followed the evidence.
Exactly. Murdered a guy at the Quick Trip, robbed the Quick Trip, took two more guys down with him, sent them to death row, got them killed on death row. You know what I mean? It's like, and then you left a mother with two kids.
So you were convicted of what? What was the charge?
First-degree murder, 2 counts of shooting with intent to kill, and a 4th count of use of a vehicle to facilitate discharge of a firearm.
And DeMarco, what was your charge?
The same as his.
And the guy who actually did it got charged with nothing? I mean, he got 5 years probation for...
He got charged with a... They charged him with accessory after the fact. And he got five years probation.
Mike Wilson went on to kill someone else and then end up on death row.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take a short break for a word from our sponsor. Hey, DeMarco, do you have a dog?
I sure do. Brody and Abby. Brody's a pit bull and Abby's a mini Yorkie.
I don't have a dog, but my mom does. And my brother and I used to fight over who was my mom's favorite, but now we both agree, it's the dog. So I decided to get my mom and her dog, BarkBox.
What's BarkBox?
Well, every month, BarkBox picks the best all-natural treats and innovative toys for your dogs. It even takes into account allergies and heavy chewers. It's a great way to try a variety of treats and toys from local and small businesses that you may not otherwise be able to find. Plus, there's free shipping on any BarkBox within the U.S.
Wow, that's great. How do I get BarkBox for my dogs?
Oh, it's super easy. You just tell them how big the dog is. You choose a plan, 1, 6, or 12 months, and you can cancel at any time, plus the free shipping, and they ship out on the 15th of every month.
Abby, do you want BarkBox?
Wow, 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 wow.
That sounds like a yes to me. For a free extra month of BarkBox, visit BarkBox.com/actual when you subscribe to a 6 or 12 month plan.
So how long did the jury take to decide that you were an evil gang member that had murdered this guy?
What, 9 hours, 8 hours or something?
9 hours. They deliberated for nine hours.
9 hours?
Yep.
I was there like 9 hours.
Did you go to the same facility? Were you guys split up? How did that work?
Oh, yeah. They always split us up. They always made sure that we were separated from each other.
They separated co-defendants.
Plus co-defendants.
Awesome.
Yeah, they don't allow co-defendants to be together. The yeah, facility. They always separate.
So where did you go, Malcolm?
I went to OSP, Maximum Security, off the top. Now, that's the one place that we worked at the same place. Yeah, we was at the max, so we were still separated because it's a max. So you're locked down 23 hours a day anyway. But I went over there off the top. You know, that's where they send all murder convictions. When you got a murder conviction, you go straight to OSP, Maximum Security Prison. Now I think they might have changed it a little bit where some people go to different facilities, but they're all like high, low maximum security facilities and places like that.
So you guys are in separate prisons. Do you get to have contact, though, in separate prisons? Like, can you write or call or anything?
Oh, no, we couldn't do none of that.
No, we couldn't write each other.
Like yeah,
our moms, you know.
I mean, I know that when you're convicted of a felony, you get an automatic appeal, right?
Yes. Yes, you do.
So how did that go?
Oh, appeal? Which one? I mean, out of the 50, you know, like.
So what was your path to being exonerated?
Oh, man, the path to getting exonerated was a long path. It was a long journey, Brooke. It was nothing quick. You know what I mean? A lot of people think, you know, in the movies, you, they find out, you know, yeah, they find out that the other culprit is the one that really did it. And everybody's like, oh, yay, we found out who it is. And they immediately, you know, let the other guy out and, you know, and they lock him up and everything is wonderful. And everybody lives happily ever after.
No, that's far from true. The guy admitted to doing the crime like 2 years before we even 2 years prior to us being released.
Okay, can you guys tell me about that?
I mean, I can tell you about it. Like, I mean, he had been trying to come forward, like, well before that. You know what I mean? But we didn't have the proper, you know, attorneys or, you know, the proper legal assistance to help us to put everything together, you know. I eventually got some assistance from some people, and they helped me to afford an attorney. And this attorney, you know, he went and looked into all the stuff, like far as the witnesses, like Harjo had came forward and was telling, you know, everything about how he was Michael Wilson when he did it. And then Michael Wilson had said some things too, but then he would pull it back because they would tell him up there where he was going, you know, fighting the death row sentence. So it was just kind of a back and forth thing. One minute he was ready to confess, the next minute he would pull back. It was just really, you know, a up and down situation. And then the witnesses, Rashawn Williams and Ken Price, you know, they were on the fence about coming forward. So it just kind of went down through a process of eventually, you know, people finally coming forward with the truth. And at one point, I had hired an attorney, and he had looked into all the evidence and gathered it up and all that, you know, and we met, what's his name, DeMarco?
Was it Gosling?
I'm trying to think of Eric Cullen.
Oh, no? Cullen?
Yeah, we met Cullen, you know, the investigator.
Oh, yeah.
And he was one of the ones that really helped us open the case up to get, you know, some people to listen to it, because we used the evidence that he had gathered and presented it to the Innocence Project. See, because he had actually sit down and talked to the witness, Rashawn Williams, the original guy who had said that he didn't see me, but he seen a car that he thought looked like mine. the original guy that the reason they saying that they arrested me off of his word. And he sit down with him and talked to him one-on-one, and he had admitted then that, hey, man, the police had pressured me. I was 17 at the time. The police pressured me to come forward and say that it was him because I was facing some charges myself. And he was like, I never really seen the guys. I never seen if it was Malcolm or whoever it was. I never even got to see him. I just said that because that's what they wanted me to say. See what I'm saying? So once he got these statements from him, and then his friend Ken Price, the other guy that was a witness, he got shot. No, he got shot in the butt. He got shot from the back, and he said that he seen us do it, you know, which was really crazy. Like, I mean,
it's obvious. You got how shot is it in possible?
You, unless you got, yeah, you got shot in the butt, in the back. Like, how
the
do you?
Back was to the crown, you know, to whatever, you know.
Yeah, obviously, yeah, your back was turned away from, you know, whatever was going on. So, I mean, how you look down the barrel and seeing exactly what type of gun was being fired and exactly who all was in the car and all this stuff at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, out of some car with tinted windows on it, it's like, how is that even possible? You know, I mean, we know that that's virtually impossible to even do, but yet, you know, they allowed that in court and the jury went for it. So it was just like, it was just stacked against us. The deck was stacked against us, you know, from the beginning. You know, even though the evidence was all, the real solid evidence was pointing to a totally different person, it was like the DA, you know, used this gang, you know, fear to completely make the jury ignore the solid evidence in exchange for some trumped up charges.
And the night I was arrested, my auntie and my mom was with me, my auntie suggested that I take a lie detector test. So I told them, yeah, I take a lie detector test and a forensic test to show that I hadn't fired any weapons, any guns or anything. And you know, that I never did none of that. No test.
No, they didn't want us to do it.
No, they never did it. They never did it. No, we didn't. We didn't take a lie detector test. We didn't take any, you know, forensic test to show that there was no gunpowder on our hands, residue or gunpowder, none of that.
They didn't want to do none of that. They didn't want to do any of that. Like, I didn't understand the whole trial of the investigation.
They wouldn't let you prove your innocence.
Yeah. It's like, I don't understand the style of the investigation. It was like, why would you not want to do a fingerprint if you know that this is what can get the, you know what I'm saying, can get the culprits? Like, why wouldn't you want to fingerprint us? Why wouldn't you want to test us? Why wouldn't you want to do a lie detector test to prove us, you know, you can utilize this against us? Why wouldn't you want to do any of these things when we're offering up to do this stuff right now? To me, I felt like they didn't want the truth. You know, it was like, we don't want the guy who really done it. We want you guys. You know what I mean? We didn't heard something about y'all. We think y'all the ones that did it. So this is, we want to build the evidence on you.
It certainly sounds like that.
So it was like, The detectives, the detectives didn't go through the process of finding out who the criminals were who actually did it or who the culprits was who actually did it. They went about proving that me and DeMarco did it. That's what they did. They didn't go looking for who did it. They went to look for how can we prove these two guys did it.
They fingerprinted the gun in the car for me and Malcolm's fingerprints, but it came back for no, our fingerprints wasn't there, but yeah, they didn't even connected. Fingerprint it. They didn't even fingerprint it for Michael Wilson's, and it was found in his possession.
That's what's crazy. Like, this is the kind of stuff I'm talking about. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, why, how do you do that? Like, why do you do that? What is, you know what I mean? There's only one purpose in that. You can't say you accidentally got a guy when you do an investigation like that. You know what I mean? It's like, for us, I was never like so much angry if it was an accident. Like, you know, if y'all just got it wrong by accident and made a mistake, you know, it got the wrong guys, you know, y'all did everything right, you just ended up getting the wrong guys. But you purposely went after the wrong guys. Like, you purposely did this. Purposely. It's like you literally purposely went after the wrong guys. We're going to completely ignore all the evidence that's pointing to this other guy. And we're going to find a way to make it where these two other dudes did it. You know what I mean? I mean, because, I mean, like you just said, I mean, if you was a jury, I mean, you a jury or you're even anybody, if you standing here, let's put it in a scenario like this. Okay, you got one guy and you got a witness that's saying, I didn't really see the dude. I just seen a car that looked a lot his, so I think it was him. But then you look over here and you got a guy with the car that the witness described. You got a box of bullets that matched the bullets that did the murder, still in the glove box of his car. He gets caught with a murder weapon in his hand, and he just got shot in the leg from these same type of gang stuff. Just prior to that, no more than a day or two before that happened. You know what I mean? It was like an obvious retaliation. I mean, it was like an open and shut case. But you completely decide, no, we don't want him. He didn't do nothing. He's innocent. He just let these other guys go do everything. And they brought everything back to him when they were finished. He was just holding all the stuff for him. And I'm like, come on, man. Are you serious? I mean, is that even something that a normal person could believe? Like, there's no way possible. You know what I mean? So that's why I say, like, it couldn't, there's no way possible I could say, okay, it was just an accidental situation where, you know, they just got it wrong. You know, we looked at guilty. You know, we got caught with some stuff, so we looked. No, we didn't. We didn't get caught with nothing. Was no evidence pointing at us.
I was on the Oklahoma Innocence Project website earlier, and I saw your name there. And we're talking now. So you were exonerated. How did you get connected with them, and how did that happen?
Oh, man. I wrote them letters, like, well before, you know, like, way back when the Innocence Project first started, and they had started with DNA evidence. You remember DNA evidence was the big thing when the Innocence Project began, right? So I immediately wrote them a letter. All I've seen was Innocence Project. All I understood was this is the Innocence Project. They're going to help innocent people get free. So I immediately wrote them letters. You know, I sat down everything, you know, that I could think of to share with them about pertaining to our case, any, you know, and asked them, please, you know, look into this. But so they wrote me back, but they were like, well, we can't do anything for you right now because we're dealing with DNA cases, you know, and in your case, there is no DNA evidence involved. So at the moment, we really can't do anything. I accepted it. I wrote thousands of letters to people. So it wasn't the first time I got turned down. You know, I had learned to take that on the chin and keep moving. Years later, a few years later, actually, they wrote me back. And this is when I had already acquired an attorney that I said was looking into the evidence and things from me. That was already, yeah, he was a paid attorney. He was looking into it for me as well. And but he was a small-time attorney out of Lawton. He was looking into it, and I said, at this time, I had him hired on, and I got a letter from the Innocence Project. And what they were saying is that, hey, you know, we've expanded our program, and now we're not only looking into DNA evidence, but we're also looking into false testimonies and things of that nature, prosecutorial misconduct, you know, things like that. We're starting to look into that now for innocent people, false confessions. They were bringing up all those things like that. And I'm like, okay, now that's more into my case, you know. And they were like, well, we were looking and one of your case looks like one of those type of cases, you know, where witness testimony, which from what you explained to us, is what got you guys convicted. And what we're seeing is the witness testimony is the only thing that got you guys convicted, you know, because obviously the evidence wasn't.
DeMarco, did you know this was going on?
No, here's the thing about that. Malcolm was writing letters, and at the same time, I'm writing letters, but we didn't even know we was writing letters. That's how when the Eric Cullen, yeah, the public, the private investigator, we both wrote mm-hmm. him letters in around 2004 or 2005, and we didn't even know it. And it came out letters yeah. later that a lot of these same people, yeah. these lawyers and all these different people, we was our letters, yeah. we was writing. Yeah. And that's how Eric yeah. Cullen got it. He was like, okay, these guys in different places and they're writing us saying the same thing. You know, let me yeah. look into this.
Oh, yeah. See, I mean, so it kind of came together. Like, And so with the Innocence Project, I wrote them back when they wrote me and told me that about their opening up their investigations and things like that. So I hurry up, immediately wrote them back and was like, hey, yeah. They were asking, do you still want help on your case? And I was like, of course I do. You know, I wrote them back. Yeah, of course I need help. I'm still in prison. You know, like, I mean, that shouldn't even be a question. I'm still here.
Oh, no, I'm good. I've decided I like the prison food.
You know what I mean? So, yeah, so of course I need help. But I had to confer with my attorney that I hired on the time, and I asked him about it. He said to me, he said, hey, man, this is great. This is awesome. Like, these people have much more, you know, connections than I could ever have. Like, you really need to go ahead and add these guys in. As a matter of fact, what I'm going to do, the evidence that I've already gathered for you on your behalf, I'm going to sit down with them in a meeting and share this evidence with them to make sure, you know, do everything I can to talk them into going ahead and taking your case, because I think this could really be helpful for you in proving your innocence. You know, he said, because, man, you got a bum deal. You know, from everything that I've read it over and over, and I just know that you guys got a bum deal. So, you know, the lawyer was really good. He went in there, he sit down, he had a meeting set up with the Innocence Project. He sit down and talked to them, and he presented all the evidence that he had already gathered for me and everything from Eric and, you know, and the witnesses and things like that. And they went ahead and was like, okay, we're on board. We're going to go ahead and help you guys too.
How did that feel?
So, you know, that was super. I mean, that felt wonderful. It felt really good because it felt like finally somebody is listening. You know what I mean? Finally, somebody is listening. After all these years, we've been fighting and just asking for somebody to listen, somebody to just help us, somebody with the resources to actually get in the courtroom and actually fight for us. You know, and we finally were blessed with someone who would really fight and had the credentials and had the power to be able to get in there and talk for us and show these people, man, there's no way possible that these guys could have did this. You know what I mean? Like, why are they in there? So I felt really, really good. Like, I felt like my life was finally making a change for the better at that point right there. You know what I mean? It's like I felt like a blessing is on the way. You know what I mean? Like, I could finally breathe a little bit, you know? So we got, you know, I got real knee deep into that. You know, everything I did, I was always writing them letters. And if I would just be laying in the bed, if I'm thinking of something, I'm jumping up in the middle of the night and writing it down, and something I might have remembered and sending it to them. Like, that was my focus. That was my mindset. Like, everything about me, you know, it was my number one priority in life, period. That's what I woke up and went to sleep to, was finding a way to get out of prison and prove my innocence. Like, that's all I thought about. Like, we fought from the heart. You know what I mean? You know, we fought with everything that we had to fight with. You know what I'm saying?
Everything. So,
everything, you know, sleepless nights, a lot of sleepless nights.
I've interviewed a lot of people, and I've noticed that the people who tell me that they had a focus, whether it was God or their family or their freedom, are the people who were able to adjust better once they were out.
Well, you know, I mean, that's what it takes. I mean, it takes that. Brooke, I'm going to tell you, it takes that. You can't have anything less than your complete focus on it, or you'll stand there for the rest of your life. If we didn't have the focus, if we didn't put that focus into, you know, proving our innocence, like, put our whole life into it, we would have never made it out of it. We'd have just took it nonchalantly and said, okay, sometimes I'll think about it and try, and sometimes I'll just go ahead and accept this. If we tried it that way, we'd still be in there right now. Understand what I'm saying? Like, we would still be in there. So I had to put a lot of stuff, you know what I mean, behind me. And it almost made me look selfish to some people. But that was the sacrifices that I had to make to find my way to freedom. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I had to do. It's like, I'm not concerning myself with anything else that's going on around me, it's like I got to stay focused on saving my own life. I mean, I look at it like this, and this is what I learned to be true, is that if we want something for ourselves and we expect to make things happen, we can't expect people to, you know, try harder than we are for our own lives. You see what I'm saying? Like, I can't expect someone else to fight harder for my life than I fight for my own life.
Faith without work is dead.
Exactly. So if I wanted some assistance, this is what I'm saying. So if I wanted some assistance, if I wanted help to prove my innocence, then I would have to be doing some work to help myself as well, because that's what's going to attract the type of people that I need surrounding me to help me to prove my innocence. Because they're going to see how diligently I'm working. They're going to see how hard and consistent I am. They're going to see how dedicated and focused I am to proving my innocence. They want to see that. Because if they see that you are so deeply focused, in, they know it got to be something going on. Like, it got to be something to what this guy is saying if he's fighting this hard for his life. He can't be fighting this hard for a lie. He can't be fighting this hard for a lie. Two people are fighting that hard for their life, it has to be. It's going to make people look and say, hold up, let me look in this. You know, let me look into what these guys are saying to us. And we were finally blessed with that opportunity, you know, when our Innocence Project came along. So like I said, it was a long process, Brooks. You see what I'm saying? You see the connections that I'm building on. You know, I'm starting with Eric. I'm starting with the paid attorney that I had. I'm starting with the letters that we were writing years and years before. So it wasn't an overnight process. This was nights and nights, many sleepless nights, many nights that we, you know, stayed up and worked hard to try to find a way. You know, I'd have wrote 10, 20 page letters just like trying to explain to people, hey, this is what happened. This is what's going on. Please listen to me. Please give us a chance. You know, so
sacrifice.
It was a very long process. And yeah, it's sacrifice. And it was worth every bit of the sacrifices that I had to make. You know, I mean, it was hard. It wasn't easy, and you couldn't expect it to be easy. You know, but at the end of the day, it's like we were blessed, and we finally made it out of there. We finally made it out.
What was the key to your freedom? The confession?
I was fit to say that. Yeah. I was fit to say our heart, our determination.
I mean, that's what I was saying. Our heart and determination was the key. The evidentiary key, I think, was Michael Wilson. You know, I mean, for him to finally, you know, come forward, because everything else was kind of surrounding cast. The two witnesses came forward and admitted that they had lied on the stand. They were 17, 16-year-old kids at the time, and they admitted they were pressured by the police to say this because they had charges themselves. Yeah, and they had charges themselves. So what other incentive could you use to tell a person, hey, you know, you're 16 years old, either you're going to go to prison for a long time or you're going to tell us that these two guys did this, and we're going to cut your sentence. What are you going to choose to do?
And the thing about Mike Wilson telling the truth, it all added up. Everything that he told him added up. Huh? His cousin stayed there. His grandma stayed here. He was, it all added up.
Oh, yeah. It was never any question as to what he was saying, because he knew everything. He knew the old evidence. He knew exactly where, you know, the crime happened. Oh, yeah. I didn't even add in there Harjo and Billy Alverson both admitted that they were with Michael Wilson when this happened, right? They were with him, and guess where Richard Harjo lived?
His sister.
Right down the street. His sister, he lived with his sister right down the street from where the drive-by happened. How do you ignore that fact right there? That's a serious fact. Billy Alverson and Michael Wilson are first cousins. Billy Alverson and Richard Harjo, his sister, Jennifer, they have three kids together. Billy Alverson has three kids with Richard Harjo's sister. They were always together, those three guys. Harjo's sister stayed right down the street from where this happened, just blocks away. They drove right by it. That's how they ran across the scene. Michael Wilson admitted that when he seen these guys out here that looked like the same guys who had shot him in the leg just a couple of days before, he seen the opportunity for him to get revenge. And that's why he came back and did that drive-by on those guys. That's what it was all about. and he only happened to ride by it because he was on his way to Billy Iverson's. You see what I'm saying? Like, they were right there in the neighborhood. It's like the police ignored this fact that they were there, that this house was right down the street from where this happened, a place where they were at all the time.
But, you know that they was on the same case. The same guys that committed our crime is the same guys that was with Michael Wilson when he committed the crime.
Yeah, when he did the murder at the convenience store.
So tell me about the day you went home.
The judge has already said that we are completely, you know, exonerated. We were actually innocent, and we had absolutely nothing to do with this crime. And the DA tried to appeal it. Yeah, they took it to the highest court, and all five judges agreed we were completely innocent. So we have six judges, not just the one that released us, but the high court, all five of the highest court judges agreed that we were innocent as well. Nobody dissented. All five of them agreed.
Did you get to go home that day?
So, oh yeah, when she read it off and said that we were innocent, she said we were free to go.
That's amazing. And you were together?
Yeah, we were together.
We're both in the county, but in separate, you know, wings. But
yeah, separate places.
After we were released, we were together.
So where did you guys go?
Oh man,
Albert
I have family.
We all went there. Albert G's, the Innocence Project.
Albert G's,
me, his family, my family.
Is that a restaurant?
It is a restaurant.
It's a restaurant downtown. But, yeah, they actually was not going to let me go at first. They were trying to give me some more charges and say, you got to do time for us for some other stuff that they had tried to put on me when I was in prison. And, my lawyers went and made a big hoopla about that, and they hurry up and shut that down and say, we were wrong. You let them guys go, because they went to blasting them all over the TV. You know, my attorneys, they went real, real diligent on that. Like, hold up. What do you mean? He got y'all trying to give him some more trumped up charges? This man just did 22 years. Now you're going to try to tell him that now he got to stay in prison and do your 5-year sentences. Like, what are you talking about, man?
Malcolm.
So, yeah.
Malcolm, you had a life sentence. We had a life sentence in 170 years, Malcolm, in prison. And it's hard in there. You know it's hard in there. But what were some of the things that kept you going?
Oh, man, I think really what kept me going, man, is just my faith and my belief that one day I would prove my innocence, man. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I think that was the biggest thing that kept my heart strong. You know, just proving it. I think it became like almost an obsession. You know what I mean? It came almost an obsession to me, to the point that it was like, I'm not going to do anything else. Like, I'm not putting anything before this. You know what I mean? If I have to die in here, let me die fighting. You know, like, that was the motto that I made for myself. That was a covenant that I made with me. See, that was a promise that I gave to me and my mother, you know, and I didn't want to die with my mother thinking that I was a murderer, that her son, you know, was a murderer or a killer. Like, I didn't want my mother to think that way. I didn't want to die with her thinking that. You know, it wasn't so much the rest of the world. It was the ones that I love, that I know love me, that I wanted to show this is not true. And I'm going to do everything in my will, everything in my power, you know, everything in me to fight for my life and to prove that I was innocent. See what I'm saying? And like I said, that fight in itself was more than enough to keep me going.
So right now, basically, if a prosecutor or investigators or whoever do this kind of investigation where it's tunnel vision or confirmation bias or intentional misconduct, there's no retribution. There's no punishment.
Some judges, some prosecutors need to have some courage to go after some of these people, especially with officers, these rogue cops who just, you know, go out of their way and they just do whatever they want to do to get a conviction. It needs to be some boundaries. You know, the DAs, they want to work with the cops. They work with the cops every day. The judges, they work with the cops every day. You know, the judges work with the DAs. All these people work together all the time. So it's hard for them to go against each other. You know what I mean? But if it's somebody's life on the line,
yeah, they should be reprimanded in some type of way, definitely.
They need to be having the courage to step up and say, hey, yeah, we might be okay, but this is a person's life. And I'm not going to sit back while you just send somebody to prison for something you didn't do.
They should be forced to step down. They should be reprimanded.
Tell me about what you do for a living.
What do I do for a living right now? Right now, I'm going to school. I'm going to college for my health and human performance degree and nutritionist. To be a nutritionist as well. So I'm going to college for that. And at the same time, I'm working a job as a setup man at a huge metal factory. I work there. And on the side, I do my own personal training.
You're very motivated. Like, even just listening to you talk, you can tell that you're a motivated individual. How do you think this whole experience has shaped that, changed how you look at things or how you react to the world around you?
Oh, man, it shaped it in a major way. It's the majority of who I am. You know, I mean, well, I think we are who we experience. You know, what we experience in life is who we become, you know? So my experience in there, that fight, even to this day now, it's like it continues. I was sharing that with someone the other day, and I was like, now that I've finally won that fight for my freedom, it's like I go on to the next thing. And now my fight is to get my degree, you know, to accomplish my mission and my career, you know, get the college education that I was deferred from.
I'm impressed by both of you. Both of you are going back to school. I could not do that again. Good job, guys.
Oh, man, it's something else. Matter of fact, when I get off of here, I got to go get to the house and go write an essay. But, yeah, so that's that. I mean, but it's just that dedication in me. You know, it's that fight. You know, I know it's a long fight. It prepared me for the long fight. You know, it helped me to learn patience and persistence. You understand what I'm saying? And it also prepared me to have an optimistic outlook on everything in life. You understand what I'm saying? Like, that's why when people ask me, why aren't you angry? Why aren't you so upset? Because I have such a optimistic outlook on life. You know, it's like, no matter how bad things can be, there's always things in life that are good that we can still look to for positivity. You understand what I'm saying?
I understand what you're saying, but I don't understand where it came from because I've never been there. But I think that you're a very motivating individual. And I know that there's someone in your life who needs those words. And I was wondering if you're okay with telling me a little bit about your brother.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. My brother, man, like my brother was like, this is my big brother. You know, he was the one right up over me. You know, I had three siblings over me. There was two older than him. And he was the one right before me. So, you know, that's what made us close. But even though he was, you know, a few years older than me, I always kind of, you know, emulated him and tried to kind of follow in the steps that he was doing with sports and things like that, because he was a really good athlete as well. So he kind of made me want to be even not as good as him, but better. You know what I mean? So he was my motivator growing up as a kid, you know. Anything he do, I'd be like, okay, when I want to do it better. You know what I mean? You know, if my brother did that, but I'm going to do better. I'm going to do it even harder, you know? So he was my motivator, you know, and I looked up to him. I mean, I love him, you know, with all my heart. So it was like when he was taken away from us, it was very, very devastating to us, you know, to me and the family as well. For Corey Ashton, I know his day is coming, though. His day is coming. It's on the way right now. You know, he has some really good attorneys that are diligently working to prove his innocence as well. But, you know, they locked him up in, I think it was 1991 for a shooting, a murder. And it was kind of almost like with our situation, you know, no gun, no evidence against him. They had evidence on another person, and they let them go. You know, it was just, he had false witnesses. same thing as our case. A lot of young teenagers, kids, they got them up there to say stuff. You know, they had other charges themselves, you know, and they used those charges against them to make them say whatever it is they wanted them to say. But there was never any physical evidence against my brother whatsoever. So it's like, you know, he's still sitting in there. He's suffering, but he's staying strong. And we just continue in the fight, you know, just like, and I told him, you know, like we share with each other long time ago, you know, what we said to each other was, my man, oh my God, they get to me. Hold on. I mean, I know this is off the subject, right? I know this is off the subject. Free Corey Atchison, right? But listen, though. I don't know if they just had a Star Wars convention or something. Like a, I don't know if these are like people from the 16th century, but they just had a dude walk down the street that's like, he's like 6'6", and he has on some spandex, purple and black spandex, with some wizard boots. Look like some wizard or leprechaun boots or something.
He getting ready for the fur. It is the time for the fur.
Hey, bro, if you seen these people, you'll be laughing hard, man. This is crazy, man. Okay, anyway.
I want to hear about what the pact you and Corey made a long time ago.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, the pact that me and Corey made, you know, when I was in there, and what we said was, hey, man, whoever gets out first, you come back and get the other one. That was what we made. That was the covenant we made. That was an agreement that we made. And, you know, and I'm sticking to it, you know, and I'm sticking to it. And that's what I do. That's my biggest fight now. I always keep something I'm fighting for. Just as hard as I fought for my own life, it's like now I'm putting that same heart and soul into fighting for my brother out here. You know, I know we got the lawyers on it to help him. And, you know, but I'm out here now with hands on, you know, any assistance that I can lend to it or any help that I can give.
I don't know what the odds is of having two brothers incarcerated for crimes they didn't commit, but, you know, it happened, you know, and, yeah. You know, Malcolm, me and Malcolm, yeah. We were released and freed and now, you know, working on Corey's case, you know, we trying to bring support and attention and awareness to his case because he's innocent.
What do you think people like me, people who don't have your experience, what can we do to help?
My thing is, I don't know what programs that they have in their area, you know, but I think one of the biggest things for me, I think is really important is anybody can get called for jury duties. You know, anybody can get called for jury duties. And I think what's important is that they hear these stories. And when they hear these stories and know and understand that if they're ever called, that they remember this situation. And so whenever you're up there on that jury, just know that that's just not a name you're looking at. That's just not an anonymous object. That's a human being. That's somebody's life that's on the line right now, you know? And so when you take that in perspective and you go back there and you deliberate, you know, with these juries, make sure. From the best of your knowledge, from the best of your ability, make sure, you know, and if you're not certain, if you're not positive, don't convict the person because you think that the prosecution said they did it or because, you know, the police got up there and said something bad about them, you know. I mean, it's very important, I think, that people know that and understand that and apply what they've learned from our situation to their own lives. And if they're ever involved in a situation where, you know, they're like that. And also for these like innocence projects, don't be afraid, you know, to reach out, you know, and assist them. If you're citizens every day, you can vote. You know what I mean? The votes that you make count. You know, put the right people in there, put the right DAs up there, put the right judges in there, get the right police in office. You see what I mean? Like, make sure you pay attention to these people that they're putting in these certain positions that have control over people's lives. You understand what I'm saying? I'm like, that's very, very important. Like, pay attention to that. And that is the power that the people have. You know what I mean? Like, they have so much more power than they realize in stopping a lot of these things from happening. You know what I mean? Because your vote counts, and everything that you, we choose to do, and the people that we choose to put in these positions, they're going to do, you know, exactly, you know, what they set out to do. Like, and if you're not paying attention to what they've already been doing in the past and things like that, then you're going to watch and let them do it all over again to the next person. So use the power that you have to vote. Use the power that you may have as a juror. Use any of these things to utilize. Use your ability to assist, you know, with the Innocence Project. It's a program that's all over this country and some places even outside the country. The Innocence Project is huge. It's okay to contribute to them in any way you can. Even if you can't contribute money, contribute some of your time to helping some of these people, you know, assisting them in any way. Because when people come out of the system, they don't have anything. They have absolutely nothing. You know, I think the most they give people is, what, $50 on a bus pass or something like that. So, you know, these people need help, man. And anything that you can do to help these people coming out of these situations, give them a job, you know, give them an opportunity, because it's hard for a person coming out of the system to get an employment. And you know that. So if you can, you know, not anybody, but of course, get to know the person and find out what type of person they really are. And, you know, if you got the opportunity, you got the means, you got the ability, you know, help them out. Don't be afraid, you know, because these are the people that are going to have to be living out here. Most people don't have, you know, a life plus 170 years. So most of them are going to be coming out of the system. And if we don't want them to continue to do crimes over and over, then we should do the things that we can to assist them and help them get legitimate employment and housing and things like this to get their lives on track.
So how did it feel interviewing Malcolm like that?
It felt different. It really did. I don't know how to describe it, but it was different. You know, this is the guy that I was, you know, convicted with. This is also my friend, and now I'm interviewing him, you know, but at the same time, it's huge. You know, here I am interviewing my co-defendant, you know, so, but it, yeah.
Well, and you know what? He's not your co-defendant anymore. He's your co-exoneree because you guys are innocent.
Yes, yes. I like that so much better. My co-exoneree.
I think that you did a great job. And I think you're a great host. And I think that you and Malcolm make a great team.
But also, Brooke, I also want to say this too, you know, I want to thank you because this radio co-hosting thing for me has been this is like a healing process, you know, up until this job, you know, talking to exonerees and man, it's been a wonderful experience. You know, this is like healing for me, this doing this radio thing. So I'm very excited. I'm grateful. I'm appreciative. I'm thankful that you chose me. Out of all the people you could have chose, you chose me. So thank you.
I feel like I'm the one who's appreciative. You have been amazing for the show. So thank you for saying that. And thank you for being my co-host. And to the listeners, there won't be an episode next week because I'm going to Disney World, but the week after that, we'll be back on our regular schedule. So until next time, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website, actualinpod.com, for pictures, transcripts, more information about guests, and a calendar of upcoming episodes. Our website guru is Sean Cole, and our VIP of transcripts is Christina Judge. Our well-read and well-connected social media superstar is Cameron Taylor. And our volunteer of all trades is Casey Weber. Original music, scoring, and podcast production is done by musical genius Blake Maples. You can see and hear more of his work at blakemaples.com. Actual Innocence is hosted by DeMarco Carpenter and Brooke Giddings. You can hang out with us on Facebook in the group called Official Actual Innocence and Convicted Discussion Group. Just ask to join and we'll let you in.
Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.